This is Kelly Lally, and I'm here in Cave City, Kentucky with Ms. Catherine Cadle. Today is August the 14th, 1987. When were you born, Ms. Cadle?
I was born September the 9th, 1918.
And where did you grow up?
In Cave City.
Did you live there most all of your life?
Well, no. I was married in 1935, and I lived around Fort Knox. Mm-hmm. For a number of years, and then my husband was sent overseas to the Philippines, and he was missing in action for about 3.5 years in the Philippines. He was in the on the Bataan Death March, but then I stayed in Kentucky and Tennessee and traveled and worked for Western Union during those years that he was away. And then after he came back, he retired, and we moved to Florida, and we've been living down there, had lived down there for about 40 years or more. And he passed away October 1983. So I'm just here visiting my father now.
So when you were younger and your family lived in Cave City, how many people were in your family?
Well, I just had the one sister. There were just the four of us.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And what did your family do for a living?
Well, my father was in the insurance business. He was also a tobacco auctioneer for 53 years. And then he bought this farm. And he's been on this farm now for 40 years.
How did you meet your husband?
I met my husband through the CCC camp. He was commander of the camp number 516 across the river on the north side of Green River. And I met him through Henry Scott and Helen Scott. She was a close friend of mine, and I heard about Lieutenant Cadle from her and said that he would like to meet me. He had seen me in town one time. He said he'd like to meet me. So we planned a date together, and it happened to be on Thanksgiving. And we had this turkey dinner out at the camp 516, and Lieutenant and Mrs. Scott were there, and Lieutenant Scott's mother was there, and another good friend, Mrs. Willis, who lived here in town. She and her son owned a drugstore. And so we went out for Thanksgiving dinner. And it was kind of a cool, crisp day, and we took pictures, and they had a turkey, and Richard carved the turkey at the table, and it was tough. So he told the striker to take the turkey back out into the pantry and bring in another one. So they brought in one that wasn't quite so tough. But the one that was tough was the one that had been given to them from around in the neighborhood there. Some of the local yokels had given him this turkey. But we had a marvelous dinner, and that was the beginning of a friendship and a courtship and finally marriage.
What did your husband do before he came to Mammoth Cave?
He was a civil engineer. He was a graduate civil engineer from Rose Polytech in Terre Haute, Indiana, and he had been doing bridge construction. And of course, at the time of the crash, the stock market crash and the depression, the big depression that we had, he was out of work. But he had maintained reserve commission in the Army. As a matter of fact, he graduated. He took ROTC in school, and he graduated with military honors. And so he had kept up his commission. And then when they started the CCCs, they were looking for men, material for officers. And so he got in on the CCCs, and that's his first place was at the Martinsville, Indiana. Then he was transferred down to Mammoth Cave, and he stayed down here until 1934, I guess it was. He was transferred to Fort Knox, and that's where he finished up with the CCC, was at Fort Knox. But then he came back to the park as in the engineering department later, after he retired from the CCC.
So you met, what was his rank when you met him?
Second lieutenant.
You met Lieutenant Cadle during 1933 and 34, is that?
Yes,
when did you get married?
In 1935, June of 35.
So did you have sort of a long distance relationship when you first went to Fort Knox?
Yes, that's true.
Mm-hmm. How did you spend the early years of your marriage?
See if I can remember. It's been over 50 years. I'm trying to think. Oh, he was stationed in Fort Knox, and oh yes, we lived near Fort Knox. We didn't have quarters on the post, but we lived in Vine Grove. We lived in Elizabethtown, was the first town that we lived in. Then we lived in Vine Grove, and then we lived out near the camp, out from Fort Knox. And we were there in 1937 when they had the big flood at Fort Knox. You remember the big flood? You don't remember the big flood.
I hear about it.
But that was loads of fun, that flood. I mean, I felt so sorry for those people, but we were marooned. We couldn't get in and out. And all we had was lamb. They confiscated a railroad car. It was full of fresh grapefruit from Florida and lamb. And that's all we had. The fresh meat we had was lamb and grapefruit, but that was good. We didn't starve, I'll tell you that.
So your husband's time at Mammoth Cave, you all were basically courting then.
That's right.
You hadn't gotten married.
No.
Did you see each other very often when he
was around here? Yes. I'd say once or twice a week we would see. It all depended upon his duties and so forth. You know, we couldn't have a date every night. But it was loads of fun. And sometimes he would come in. He would bring two of the men with him. He had two black men in his company. And we would take them to Horse Cave to the movie. And they would drive, one would drive the car and the other one would be the doorman. And we would go to the movie and take them along with us. And that was loads of fun because the eyebrows were always raised in front of my house when that car would stop out with two black men in the front seat. That was loads of fun. But there were a lot of cute things that happened out at the camp. One I remember quite distinctly, I wasn't there, of course. But this one native that lived close by, he was always coming over to the camp, and they would, if it was lunchtime, well, they would invite him to have lunch with them, you know. And so one evening, it was late in the evening, he decided he would come over to camp. And they, in those days, they had what they called a great big square grease trap. You see, they had a cesspool there to take care of the water and the dishwater and all that business and the latrines and the bathrooms. And so he came over, they were cleaning that out. And he came over that one particular night and he had on his overalls and his straw hat and all of his garb, you know, and some reason or other it was dusk and he didn't see that open pit and he fell right into that thing. Well, he came up with a sputtering and a spitting and grease all over him. He was just a mess from top to bottom. So they took him out and got him cleaned up and gave him a shower and gave him all new army clothes to put on. And he was the happiest lark. I don't think he ever took those clothes off for 6 months. And another funny thing that happened over there was this first sergeant, this Jimmy Lankins, had terrible teeth. And he had saved his money. Of course, they didn't make very much money in the CCCs. And it was just a nominal thing, you know. But he had saved his money and saved his money. He wanted a set of false teeth. So Richard had helped him get an appointment and get to the dentist and this, that, and the other about his teeth. And he was so proud. He came in one day and said, "Hey, Louie, look, I've got my teeth." And Richard said, "Okay, now you be careful this weekend when you go to town that you don't lose those false teeth." "Oh, I will, I will, I will." So, okay, they came to town and they got having a little fun. And he'd had a few beers and he got back to camp and he got sick at his stomach. And you know what? He lost those false teeth in the latrine.
Oh, no.
He hadn't had them a week. Isn't that awful? Richard said he felt so sorry for that poor boy. But there were loads of things that happened, you know. But they those men did wonderful work. They worked hard, and they liked their work, and they really worked hard and enjoyed it. But of course, you know, and whenever you get a group of people like that together, there's always problems. And of course, that's what your commanders are for, is to help solve those problems. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting, and I enjoyed it. I like to go out there. Sometimes I'd go out there on a weekend for Sunday dinner, and that was nice. And then Helen and Henry and Richard and I would go different places together. So we had a good time together during those few months and years.
Was your husband's nickname Louis, did you say?
Hmm?
What was your husband's nickname? Was it?
Well, most of people called him Dick. His name is Richard.
Uh-huh.
Richard Cadle.
Uh-huh.
But everybody called him Dick. But he was a lieutenant.
Oh, okay.
And they called him Louis. That's how much they thought of him, you know. And he, of course, they didn't call him Louis when anybody else was around. But it was just kind of a friendly sort of thing.
So your husband was the camp commander.
Yes.
What were his duties? What kind of duties did he have?
Well, he had to see that the camp was run properly. He had Joe Calisa was the company clerk. He had to run all the organization. There were two lieutenants. There was Scott and Richard, and they one would take part of it, and one would take the other part. Then there were the foremen that worked details, that Richard would organize those men to go out and do this work. You see, they were the ones that worked in the park and cleared land and did things like that for the park so that it would be a pretty place, you know, for the people to come.
You say that Richard and Henry Scott kind of split duties?
Yes, uh-huh.
Were they on the same level, or did Richard have the...
Well, Richard was in command,
mm-hmm.
but he and Henry worked together. And they even had an educational advisor out there that would teach the boys that hadn't had their proper education.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Richard had to do all the buying. They have to clear things through Richard before they could do these things, you see. But Joe Calisa and this Lampkins could run the camp. They could run it. They knew all about it, and they were very, very good help and marvelous. But that's how Joe got his start, and he was very, very thankful for that. He's a fine man, a fine man. You'd never want to meet anybody any nicer than Joe.
Oh, yes, I've met him. He is wonderful.
Oh, yeah. He's a doll. He really is.
How much free time did Richard have when he was camp commander here? Did he have much time?
Well, no, you didn't. You didn't really have any time. Of course, evenings you had free. Sometimes you had to stay there in evenings, you know, you were on call. Or, and weekends they would have, as I recall, they would have to take weekends. They would be on duty on the weekend, you know. Maybe one weekend for one be Henry, and the next weekend it would be Richard's time to be on duty. But someone in command had to be there at all times. And then if they wanted to take any time off, they would have to get a leave of absence. Say if they wanted a week's vacation or something, you accrued your leave, just like in the Army,
mm-hmm.
like in the regular Army. You accrued your leave. And so if you had enough time, you could take a week, or you could take 2 weeks and have that time off. And then whoever was second in command would take command at that time. So if Richard left, then it would be Henry that would take over the command.
Describe what Camp Number 4 looked like.
Well, you know, it's too bad that I have some beautiful pictures of it. Did Joe have any pictures?
I didn't see any of Joe's. I've seen other pictures. I'm not sure if I saw any of Number 4, though.
Well, I have a beautiful aerial picture of Number 4 camp. the flagpole, to me, was the most impressive thing they had there. And it was over to one side. Then you would have your officers' quarters, and then you would have your the offices where they conducted their business would be close to that, and then your barracks, and you'd have a separate kitchen, and then the barracks would be back in through there. Then, you, of course, they had so many army trucks and equipment. And then the foreman would have a place where he kept all the tools that they used, and they had to account for those tools. I guess Ellis Jones told you all about that, did he not?
Yes, he told me about the tools.
Yeah. And then, of course, you see they had places where they stored their supplies, like the sheets, the blankets, the pillowcases, and the towels. And they had to take inventory of all of those things periodically to see that someone hadn't absconded with a few of them, and just like they did for the tools. Mm-hmm. So it was a beautiful camp. It wasn't, there weren't any trees around it. They always put it in a clearing. Mm-hmm. But it was a beautiful camp. And as I say, the flagpole was very impressive.
Did you see any of the other camps?
I did, but I don't recall any of the other camps, just to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I really don't. There were several of those camps, and I think there were four or five, weren't there?
Four.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I don't remember seeing the other camps. But there were loads of people that lived in town. The town was inundated with people, you know, families with places to live, and it was hard to find a place for them to live. But we knew a lot of the people from the other camps. I do remember meeting a number of the people from some of the other camps. But I don't know where they are now. I have no idea.
So the people from the different camps?
Yes, like number one camp and number two camp, they would be married. Some of them were married and had their families here. And some of them had families while they were here. Mm-hmm. And they had apartments downtown, like up over one building. There was a drugstore. And there were apartments up above that. People converted them into apartments. They weren't palatial or anything like that, but they certainly were livable.
Were these just the boys themselves, or
no? It was the commanders. Mm-hmm. The ones that were in charge of the camps, had command of the camps.
So the leaders pretty much interacted.
Yes, they Mm-hmm. Yes.
What about the boys? Do you know if they interacted much the different camps?
That I don't know, but now they were allowed to come into town. They would bring them in, like, say, for instance, one night a week they would be allowed to come to town and do what they wanted to do. Maybe a Saturday night, or maybe one night during the week they would be allowed to come to the picture show. And they would get in a big army truck, and whoever wanted to come could come. If there was enough for two trucks, then two trucks would come. However, you know, many wanted to come. But, of course, a certain amount had to stay in camp. They were on call, you know, to stay in camp. But the majority of them could come and go as they pleased.
Do you remember what particular projects were worked on in Camp Number 4 by chance? Although a lot of the camps did a lot of the same things, like plant trees and things, mm-hmm. Seems to me there might have been some specific jobs that Number 4 did.
I think most of their work was across the river. Mm-hmm. And I really don't know just exactly what they did do, to tell you the truth. Clearing a lot. I know they had to clear a lot of land. That was one thing. But for what, I don't remember. Have you heard that in some of your other?
I'm thinking they were putting up telephone lines.
Well, that could be true, too. Mm-hmm. Homer Salisbury from Prestonsburg, Kentucky, he was in charge he was the head foreman out there. And he was quite a worker. And he had charge of all those projects. And he and his family lived here in Cave City. And as a matter of fact, he had two daughters who were one daughter was the age of my sister, and they were quite good friends, but he's dead now, and I think she still lives in Prestonsburg, but I'm not sure. She would be in her 80s, I guess, at this point.
Let's see. It sounds like your husband had a pretty good relationship with the boys. Did he get along well with them?
Oh, yes. Oh, they loved him. They really did, and they just cried. Some of them cried when he left and had to go to Fort Knox. They didn't want that at all. But He always had a good relationship with his men. Whenever, even later when he was in the Army, he had a good relationship with his men. He always did.
Did he socialize much with them or take part in any of the recreation activities?
Oh, sure. Oh, yes. They played touch football and baseball and all that sort of thing, you know. And they had a recreation room over there where they could play ping pong. And the boys enjoyed the camp over there. They really liked it over there. It was a nice place. Of course, it was a little desolate. I mean, it was a little secluded, you might say. They didn't have access to a lot of fun, but they made their own. They'd pitch horseshoes and games and things like that, which they enjoyed very much.
And your husband joined in now and
then? Oh, yes. Oh, sure. He liked that. He was quite a sportsman, and he liked all kinds of sports. He was quite a marksman with guns. He loved guns, and he loved to fish and to hunt, and he hunted with some of the natives across the river, quail hunting and dove hunting. He enjoyed that a lot, so he really did get with it over there. He loved it. He liked it very much.
Could you tell me again the story you told me about when the ferry was on the other side after
Yes. When we started courting, they had a ferry that went across Green River. They still have a ferry, but this was an old ferry. And Vertus Dorsey was the ferryman. And he became a good friend of my husband's. He was a little leery of him at first. He didn't know just exactly how to take that man with the uniform on, you know. And so he decided one day he'd try him out. So he asked Richard, he said, "Hey, Lieutenant, you see that squirrel up in that tree? Or a bird up in that tree?" I don't remember whether it was a squirrel or a bird. And he said, "Sure." He said, "Can you hit that?" "Sure, I can hit that." And so he drew a bead with this pistol and shot that bird out of the tree. Well, from then on, he and Vertus were real close friends, and he didn't question him anymore. So one night, Richard and I had a date, and he had gone back across to camp across the river. And when he got down to the ferry was on the other side of the river. And he thought, what in this world? So, well, he had to take off his clothes, and he didn't want to get his uniform all dirty. So he swam across the river, got the ferry, and brought it back. And the next day, Vertus heard about it. He told him he better leave a rowboat or something over there across that, on this side. He didn't want to be caught like that anymore. But I thank goodness it wasn't cold weather. I don't know what he would have done if it had been cold weather. I guess he'd come back to Cape City.
Probably so.
Yeah, I wouldn't have blamed him.
Let's see. Do you remember if the CCC boys played many pranks on each other? Did you hear about those very much?
No, I really didn't. I'm sure it happened, but I don't remember any of those stories at all.
What kind of stories did Richard used to tell you? About funny things that went on in camp?
Well, he was telling me about the false teeth that Jimmy Lampkin lost, and about the little fellow that fell in the grease trap. And other than that, I don't remember any stories. Of course, you know, I was courting and I could have cared less. But sometimes he would tell things, you know, just like the tough turkey, you know. He could even carve it at the table. But that's about all I recall. Richard was quite a speedster. And when we were courting, they'd say, there was a big curve out here on the Mammoth Cave Road, and they'd say, "Look out, here comes Cadle." He'd take that curve on two wheels. But they used to, I can't tell you any particular stories or pranks that they played on each other. I'm kind of wandering a little bit. But I did remember this, that they used to have to come in. They'd come in to the shoe shop and bring all the shoes. And Mr. Duke had a shoe shop here in town, a little bitty old place in the wall. And Richard would bring, they'd bring all the shoes in to be repaired for the boys, you see. And just things like that, you'd see, and that's how he got to know the local people. And then, of course, they had to set up at the People's Bank. They had to set up bank accounts. And Helen Scott's father was president of the People's Bank. And that's kind of how we got, and she was working in the bank, and that's how we kind of got together on Richard and Henry. We figured we should let that pass by.
Did your husband get along very well with the local residents?
Yes, he did. He really did.
Did he have much of a problem when he first came in? I know there was a lot of tension because of the park being developed.
Well, no, he really didn't. Another good friend of his was Gordon Brown, Glasgow Ice Cream Company. He owned the ice cream company. And you see, he would go to the local people to supply their food and things, you see, which helped a lot. And that's how he got to know the local people. And St. Charles Market over in Glasgow, and they did a lot of buying from them. And so this Gordon Brown was a very good friend, the ice cream company. And of course, I wasn't the first one that Richard ever dated around here. He had some other dates before me. But anyway, it all worked out to my advantage.
You're also a local resident. You know, you were born here and you were raised here.
Yeah.
Tell me about what the people around here thought about, not the CCC, but the park being developed in general.
Well, I think they were happy about that, as much as I remember. I think they were very happy about the park because they realized that it would bring more to our town. And this was a booming little town when those camps were here. Mm-hmm. And it gave them a lot more business. And, of course, they couldn't handle all of the business, but they handled most of it. And I think that they were very, very happy about it. So that's my question. But I think they were very, very happy about that because it did help the town very much.
I know that some people who lived on the park land were displaced and had to move off.
Yes, that was hard for them. They did undergo hardships, that is for truth. However, the Park Service was good to them, the government was good to them, but it took them away from their habitat and from their local surroundings, which was bad.
Yeah.
And they resented that, and it's understandable. So it was bad in that respect. But other than that, it was very good.
How did the white people feel about the presence of blacks in the camp nearby?
Well, you see, number four, I don't know whether number four was the only one that had blacks or not. I don't think so, was it?
Number one was a total black.
It was. Mm-hmm. You see, I had forgotten that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that too much noise?
We'll be okay.
I really don't recall that. I know that out at number four, there were only those two.
Mm-hmm.
And they got along all right. There was no problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as number one, I had a little experience with one of them, with the blacks.
Mm-hmm.
I had been selling tickets down at the movie theater one summer. The manager and his wife had gone on vacation. They asked me to sell tickets, and I did. And so I was going home, and I was walking up this street, and this one black boy followed me and tried to grab my purse. And I screamed and hollered, and then I acted like I was going to hit him with what I don't know, except my purse was all I had. I didn't have the receipts from the movie theater, but they had been there that night, and they thought I did. And so anyway, I ran back to town. And of course, that upset the town, but they never did catch him because he got on the truck and they went back to camp, and that was the end of that, you see. But that's just one of the many things. You know, I don't think there was ever too much of that went on.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they, because we had black people here in our town.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I don't know whether they, you know, had a relationship with each other or not. I really don't.
Okay.
But I think those black people were from everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I really couldn't give you too much information on that.
Okay, I'm going to turn this over. This is the second side of the tape of my interview with Ms. Catherine Cadle. Well, how successful do you feel like the CCC was in relieving the effects of the Depression?
I think it was very successful, and I think that's what we need today, is something to take care of this unemployment, because there's so many depressed areas. And I feel that the Job Corps was a good thing, except that it didn't go far enough. But I think that the CCC was a wonderful thing. And it gave a lot of men a start that they would have never had in life. And they got an education. They learned a trade. They learned how to become a part of society. And I really think that it was a marvelous thing. And I think that if we had more Roosevelts, we would be a lot better off.
Do you think it made a difference for the economy of the local area? We talked a little bit about that earlier.
Yes, it did at that time. Of course, since then, things have changed a lot. And, of course, this town has gone down because most towns do go to shopping centers. But it's taken its toll. I mean, the economy of this town was terrific when the CCCs were here and they had all those camps. The Tittletown was booming. But, of course, it has taken its toll.
Do you think the main economic feature right now would be the tourism, do you think?
Yes, that is the main thing now, is the tourism. And, of course, we have here on I-65, we have a lot of restaurants and motels and things here that does help because it employs people, whereas if we didn't have I-65, those things would not be available. And of course it does help. And of course it's hard to find a place to rent right now in this town. Most people own their own homes, and there are some lovely homes here in town. It has built up in the last few years, and lovely homes here.
There are a lot of park employees that live here?
There are quite a number of park employees that live here and that work out the cave. They live here in town and work out there and go to work every day. As a matter of fact, my brother-in-law retired from the National Park Service. He was in the purchasing department, and he was also a retired major in the Army. And he retired from out there.
What would you consider to be the greatest contribution of the CCC?
Well, I think, to be repetitious, to say that they had a place in society, they learned a trade, they furthered their education or got an education that they perhaps would have never had. And I think those are the things. I think that was marvelous as far as the CCC was concerned.
Do you think it made a difference in the military for World War II?
In the military what?
Do you think the CCC being during the Depression right before World War II, do you think it made a difference in the makeup of the military or the way the
Well, yes, was yes, I do. I think that that it prepared those men for World War II, and they didn't go in scared to death because they had an idea of regimentation and of how to follow orders. I think that was very important. Yes, it's quite true.
Did you see any problems in the CCC, either at Mammoth Cave or later on with your experience?
Problems, for instance, what kind of type of problems do you have in mind?
Any organizational problems?
No, it was well organized. And each man knew what he had to do. And of course, in anything, there's always somebody that's going to complain. There's going to be complainants. You can't have that many people together without having some complainers. But I really think that when at Fort Knox, they seem to get along all right. I mean, the Army men didn't resent the CCC boys, and they did all the hard work for the Army boys. They did the dirty work, but they still were on a nice Army post at Fort Knox, and they had a lot of advantages there that they didn't have out here at Number 4 camp. But it was interesting. They, of course, the wives of the officers up there, there was two camps up there, as I recall. They had, we had club privileges, and we had a nice social time. We had to go to all the social things up at the post, and which was nice, and we enjoyed that. And you met a lot of people. It broadened your scope of friends, and those men. They met friends, which were lifelong friends. So I think that is an advantage, too.
Well, tell me the rest of the story. After Mr. Cadle or Commander Cadle was sent to Fort Knox and you all had been courting.
Well, we were married in June of 1935, and he was stationed at Fort Knox when we were married. And then after we were married, we moved to Elizabethtown. We had a little apartment in Elizabethtown. And then we moved to Vine Grove, and we stayed there. Then he got out of the CCCs, and then he came back. We came back to Cave City to live. And we lived here for a few years, and he was working out at Mammoth Cave with the Park Service as an engineer. He was with the engineering department there at the park. And I've forgotten how long he worked there. It must have been two or three years. And then he was called back into the military service. That was in 1939 or 40 that he was called back into military service. And he was made a first lieutenant, he was made a first lieutenant before that, made first lieutenant while he was in the CCC. And then he went, he was still stationed at Fort Knox. And he was in, he got in because of his love for guns and ammunition and so forth, he transferred into the Ordnance Department. And was in the 19th Ordnance Company, battalion rather, it wasn't a company, it was a battalion. And he took they formed the 17th Ordnance Company out of the 19th Ordnance Battalion. And he commanded that and was sent to the Philippines before Pearl Harbor. And he was over in the Philippines when they struck at Pearl Harbor, and then the next day they struck the Philippines. And he was a prisoner of war of the Japs for 3 or 4 days and had a miraculous escape out of a schoolhouse. And he was in the death march, I don't know how many days, he got back into the death march. And then he fell along the wayside, and he felt sure he would be bayoneted, but he wasn't. And after that, he was just lying there, practically unconscious, and he was with an American civilian. And the Filipinos came and picked them up. And so then he joined this guerrilla band, and he was a guerrilla over in the Philippines, and I didn't know whether he was dead or alive for three and a half years. And he was gone all of that length of time. And so he was back in the hills and trying to keep out of the way of the Japanese and still give them a hard time. So that's what he was doing all that length of time. And then he returned in 1945. And he was hospitalized at Fort Knox, in Louisville at Nichols General, Walter Reed in Washington. And then in 1946, he was retired, and that's when we moved to Florida.
How old was he when he retired?
Ooh, let's see, 1946, and he was 44 years old when he retired. But it was due to his health.
Yes.
Yes, it was a health.
So, did he enjoy his retirement years, or did
Yes, he did. We really did. We traveled. We went back to the Philippines in 1977 and had a nice 2 weeks. And he met a lot of the natives over there that helped him when he was back in the hills. And we still correspond with those people. And, he fished and hunted. He loved to duck hunt and fish. And he did a lot of that in Florida. And then his health gradually became worse. We used to go up to North Carolina in the summertime, stay about 6 months, and then come back to Florida in the wintertime and spend 6 months. Mm. So that was nice. We enjoyed it very much.
And when did he die? In 83?
'83.
Mm-hmm. Those years when he came back to work as an engineer, the CCC was still there. At the park, 36 and 7 or 7 and 8 or something like that, or 9?
I don't remember. Mm-hmm. I really don't. Have you heard anybody else say anything when they left here?
I think they stayed until 41. I didn't know I guess you would have known if he had anything to do with them anymore.
Well, no, he wasn't connected with them anymore. Mm-hmm. He did what he used to do, he used to survey down in the cave. Or if they had a parking area that they wanted to put in, they would survey that. Or they surveyed, I know one time, for a camping area. And he did an awful lot of surveying for different things. And then if they had a different entrance to the cave, they'd have to go down into the cave and survey. And my husband was tall. And he didn't like that going down to that cave surveying because he couldn't crawl through all those little holes very well. But he enjoyed it. He enjoyed it like out at the cave because he knew so many of the people that he had known before when he was out there. Mm-hmm. And the guides and all that sort of thing. It was quite interesting for him. And of course then he met additional friends. And I think at that time, I don't know whether Joe had gotten out of the service or not. Joe, of course, was in the service too. Mm-hmm. And he had to curtail his activities with the National Park Service. But I don't believe Joe was out there at that time. I'm not sure where Joe was at that time. Mm-hmm. He may have been a ranger. He was a ranger for a number of years at different parks, mm-hmm, until he got to be superintendent.
You all were at both Mammoth Cave and Fort Knox, even though you weren't married while you were here. Could you tell me was there much difference in the two camps?
The camps up in Fort Knox were entirely different. It was an entirely different organization. They were more or less a headquarters camp, whereas these were not headquarters camps. And by headquarters, I really can't tell you what the difference was, but it was a much larger camp, and they had a lot more activities, and they did a lot more work up there at Fort Knox, I guess, different types of work, I would say, whereas out at number four, it was more or less, like you say, building electricity lines and poles and clearing land and all that sort of thing. But at Fort Knox, it was entirely different. I can tell you one thing that the CCCs, I almost forgot to tell you this, that Richard's CCC men dug the gold vault at Fort Knox. I almost forgot this, and I think this was really something. And we used to watch the progress. And as a matter of fact, we were allowed to go in to the gold vault before they put the gold in, of course.
Oh, that's something to say you did.
But the day they brought the gold into Fort Knox, they had a spur, a railroad, that went right behind all these officers' quarters. And years ago, 31W used to run right through Fort Knox as you went north or south, whatever. And they brought the gold in there one day by railroad, and every snitch of that post was guarded within inches of your life. You were not allowed on the post. If you didn't live on the post, you were not allowed on the post. And they had a guard every 5 or 10 feet on that railroad track that went up to the gold vault. And I guess some of the CCC men were the guards too, but they all did the digging of the pit where the gold is. And there was one major that he was the commander of the post exchange. And he went home for lunch and he couldn't get back. They wouldn't let him go back to the post exchange. So that was quite interesting. I remember that quite well. I was visiting someone on the post that day because I was determined to see that gold go in there. So the CCC men did dig that, and it was the Richards Company men that dug the vault at Fort Knox. So I'm sure that you hadn't heard that little story.
No, I haven't at all. Well, let's see. You were at Fort Knox for just a couple of years or around there?
Yes. Yes, we were. He was up at Fort Knox. Oh, well, you see, he was there in the CCCs. Then he came back here. He was only up there a year or so, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then he came back and worked for the National Park Service. Then when he was back in the, recalled back into the service again, the military service, mm-hmm. but just before World War II, we were back at Fort Knox, and that's the only post I was ever on was Fort Knox. And my sister and her husband were on umpteen of them. She worked at Fort Knox, too, during the war. She worked up there, too.
Well, when you all were married, did you have much to do with the CCC boys when you were up there? Did you interact very much with
them? No, we didn't have to because I was the only wife up there. But during the 1937 flood, everybody had flu. And all the ladies on the post would go and meet those trains. They brought these trains down from West Point, and all those people from Louisville, some of them came down the river, and they would go down to Brandenburg and meet them in army trucks and bring them up there. And the ladies would all go, and we'd have to help and get them organized and to do where they were going to stay, and we'd gathered up clothing and this, that, and the other to take to them, you know, because mm-hmm. a lot of people didn't have clothes to wear, and we did that sort of thing. And of course, the usual bridge playing and the luncheons at the club, we entered into all of those sort of things, which was loads of fun. But the activities were nice, and you know, you met a lot of nice people.
So you had more to do with the other officers and their families, more so than the boys themselves?
Well, I didn't have too much to do with the boys. Of course, I knew a lot of the boys. A lot of the strikers that would come in to service the pot-bellied stoves, they'd bring the coal in if I was down at the camp. And a lot of times I would go down and eat with them in the evening. And I know this one striker kept my car clean all the time, and he would bring my car out to me, and he'd wash it. He almost washed the paint off of it. But he was real cute. He was a little Polack. Poochak was his name. And he was a doll. But I did know quite a few of the men, mm-hmm. whom I've forgotten now. I don't remember them now.
Well, when your husband went off to the Philippines, what did you do?
I went to work for Western Union, mm-hmm. and I traveled all over Kentucky and Tennessee with Western Union, and made vacation reliefs and managerial reliefs for when people were sick or had vacations. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did.
And did you stay with them when your husband
yes.
came back?
Well, no, I didn't. And then they called me to come back to work. And I worked for Western Union for about 28 years, and I finally retired from Western Union.
So you still live in Florida?
Yes, I still have our home in Florida.
And you come up?
Periodically to see my father, who's 95 years old.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Have you been out to the park?
Yes, I have. I was out to Mammoth Cave Hotel and had lunch. It was Sunday dinner on Sunday, mm-hmm. and had a delightful dinner out there. It's changed so much. My only regret is that they tore down the old hotel. Mm-hmm. I wish that they could have maintained that, because it was so much fun out there. Oh, that big porch, the big veranda they had with the rocking chairs, and it was loads of fun to go out there. And I knew so many of the people that worked in the hotel, And the cook they used to have out there in the Mammoth Cave Hotel, Grace Bethel, she was a marvelous cook. I don't know whether Joe mentioned her or not, but she was a wonderful cook. And when my husband got back from the Philippines, the Cave City Women's Club and the Cave City Chamber of Commerce had a big banquet out there for him at the Mammoth Cave Hotel. And they had the governor and his wife, governor of Kentucky and his wife were here, invited down. And that was quite, I don't know how many, I think there was about 350 invited people that came, and they could have had more if they'd had more room. So,
well, it sounds
so
like
I've had an interesting life.
Yes.
And with the CCCs and the Army and Western Union.
Well, I guess the CCC had a big impact on your life.
The CCC was the start of my life. And I always have a warm spot in my heart for them. I have a lot of memorabilia from Camp 516 that Joe Calisa gave to Richard, and I have kept it all these years, like pennants and pictures and just loads of things from Camp 516.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to tell me?
I can't think of anything. I've just about told you my life's history.
That's great. That's what I wanted. Well, then I guess I'll turn off the tape now.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.